Welcome back, listeners of the Onward Podcast. I am so thrilled that you have decided to download and hit play on yet another episode of this show. Once again, Onward is an organization that exists to care for, to connect, to equip, and encourage ministry leaders who are serving God's kingdom today. Real quick up front, also, I wanted to let you know that we have about five spots left for our spring cohort that is going to happen just around the corner. If you are in the beginning years of your ministry career and you'd like a chance to make some meaningful connections, get some powerful one-on-one mentorship, and a chance to go on a retreat with some other pastors and leaders from around the country at the iconic Joshua Lodge up at Hume Lake, head to onwardleader.com to apply. I also wanted to invite any of you who listen to this show to hop on our Instagram. It's at onwardleader. Let us know what you think. Let us know what guests or topics would be helpful or meaningful for you as we continue on this journey of trying to put out a resource that would help those of you who are serving in ministry. Enough of that, because today we have an incredible guest, Grant Skeldon. Grant is currently the Next Gen Director for Think alongside of Gabe and Rebecca Lyons. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Think is an organization that educates and equips Christians to effectively engage in this cultural moment. But Grant's influence extends far beyond the confines of traditional platforms. He's contributed to publications like the Wall Street Journal, Relevant Magazine, and the Gospel Coalition. He's also put a lot of his wisdom into a book called The Passion Generation that's been used by pastors from around the country to help understand how to lead and equip the next generation of ministry leaders. To top it all off, he's a teaching pastor at the Way Church. And best of all, he's our guest on today's episode. Grant, thank you so much for your time and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Corey. Bro, you're always killing it when it comes to men's ministry and discipleship and mentorship. So love talking to you.
I appreciate that, Grant. Thank you. I have a couple questions up front. I would love for people who may not already be aware of you to get to know you. But dude, you're so well known by so many people because as best as I can describe, you're like the evangelical Nick Fury, just like connecting pods of Avengers from around the country. How did you get into that? That's how you and I met. I got to attend one of your retreats and it was awesome. But how do you find yourself doing what you're doing today?
Yeah, Nick Fury is definitely the more famous Marvel character. I've actually literally viewed some of the profile of, I guess, the lane or calling God's put me in is more like the other character in Marvel who's in a wheelchair. His name is Charles Xavier from Marvel. Because he's got kind of, yeah, as Professor X, and you know, the X-Men, he is the creator of the X-Men. And basically, he's kind of constantly looking for mutants, if you will, and trying to give them community where and give them a place to where they're included, especially since many of them are navigating or battling being rejected or disliked for what makes them different. He helps them not run from those differences or dislike humans because they're different than them, but celebrate those differences and even give them a community where everyone else has different things too and has found a way to harness it as a gift. And so for me, I actually got really full-fledged going this X-Men analogy.
I felt
kind of like Wolverine in the church in the sense that Wolverine is a good guy, but he's definitely rough around the edges. He definitely doesn't fit in perfectly, even with the good guys. Like he's not rolling with Magneto. He's not a bad guy, but so he's chosen to be on the good side. However, he's definitely not like Scott Summers or Cyclops or Beast. He's, like I said, rough around the edges. He's got some things he's been through, but he's very effective. He's got a quote he's known for saying, like, I'm really good at what I do and what I do is not really nice or something like that. He's like a mercenary assassin. And so when I grew up in church, I remember kind of feeling like I didn't fully connect and I didn't grow up where a lot of my Christian friends were, Yeah, just had amazing Christian dads and moms and legacies even sometimes and upbringings. And I didn't have as much of that. My mom was definitely a prayer warrior, and I appreciate so much about what she built community wise and praying for us and almost borderline dragging us to church at times to try to get us closer to God. But yeah, just didn't feel as close. And kind of answering your question, how did I start getting really connected to young Christian leaders in all these different spaces? Is honestly, I just was a young Christian leader that was lonely myself, and I wanted to form community. And I was very fortunate to be nudged by a mentor to do something about it and to do a retreat or do something to get people together. If I'm honest, Corey, I was very dedicated to Dallas, but I felt very lonely that I didn't have many friends, though I knew some that were young leaders leading at high levels in other cities, like Atlanta or New York and other places, that I almost felt like maybe I should move to where these guys are. And my mentor at the time, Eric Swanson, basically said, no, don't move. Like, of course, I know you're not going to actually move, but you don't even need to. He's like, you could just get 3 to 4 meaningful days. And he said, don't discount how meaningful 3 to 4 days could be with these people. If you guys decide to go deep fast, you could really be recharged and go back into your mission field. And so I started with just 12 guys, and I'd say about 8 of those guys are really, really close friends to this day. We kind of have each other's backs in so many ways. We've done a lot of big things together too. We've all written our books together. We've all with major publishers. We've all speak quite a bit. Noah Heron, the Way Church that you mentioned, was one of those guys at the time. This was about 6 to 7 years ago, and he's planted a church in Nashville, and I'm helping him launch that and on the teaching team. And we're 4.5 months in, and there's about 300 to 400 people regularly coming. Over 130 people have given their life to Christ in just a few months, and we're an overflow like every week the last 3 to 4 weeks. And I know we have just really raised the level of maturity, I think vision, intentionality with our intimacy with God, now intentionality with our wives, as all of us are now married. Many of us are now parents. It's been massive to have those people in my life. And I think it just led to other people wondering, why don't you do bigger retreats for more people? And I started to very quickly. And now it's just grown into kind of a really big community of high capacity young Christian leaders that want to change the environments that they're in.
Wow. Yeah, I got to observe that firsthand maybe 1.5 years ago, and was blown away at the room that you were able to put together, and was blown away at the level of passion that those leaders that you kind of assembled here around SoCal that they had. I think for anyone listening to this who serves in ministry, you would probably be able to relate to the level of loneliness that is experienced. It's really easy to feel like you're the only one. You're the only one who cares as much. You're the only one who's sacrificing as much. And it was a breath of fresh air to be around people and in such nuance and really creative ways too. Not everyone there was pastors. And so I commend you for that. It sounds like you said, did you grow up in Dallas? Is that where you're from originally?
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in Dallas, and 3 years ago got married, and a couple weeks after that moved to Nashville, Tennessee, to where I took a job with Think, was formerly Q or Q Ideas, hosted the Q conference, but changed our name in 2023 to Think, and that's where we do these retreats. And Corey, we got to get you to, I'm now doing a summit where, you know, those retreats were private gatherings, private invite. But again, continuing to expand it, we will want to include more people. Is in November of last year, we had like John Mark Comer and Matt Chandler and David Platt, and also like several young leaders speaking and leading. About 1,000 young people showed up, but it still is a young leader conference, but it's not private invite. So we're doing that again November 8th and 9th this year. And Lisa Bevere, John Bevere, John Tyson. I have a lot of young leaders as well share there. But yeah, I'd love to have you come hang with us. But that's a lot of my heart is definitely, I do some speaking, but I would say more so I'm a convener and a connector of people that should know each other. And if they did know each other, it would accelerate the work they're doing in the kingdom and ideally help them finish well better in a healthier way because of the support and community that they have.
Yeah, we were talking about the X-Men analogy early, which I fully relate to. I'm not sure how many people listening would, but I could talk in those terms for the rest of our conversation.
Okay.
It's so interesting to me that within God's kingdom, or at least like here in America, there are people who exist as connectors. And it's such an important and powerful role to play. It's a title that I'm assuming you're walking in because it's something God's given you. Because so much of at least like the perceived outsider perspective, it would be really easy to assume like, oh, there's these pockets, there's cliques. How would I even break into that? You know, and we live in an age where so much content and so many of our influential pastors, authors, speakers, entertainers are all accessible online. Let's mm-hmm. rewind a little bit and just talk about like, how did you find yourself starting to assemble these groups of leaders? How did you start reaching out to some of the people that were really, maybe their books or their theology was impressing upon you? How did you begin to make those connections as a young leader, just looking to assemble these groups of people?
I mean, this is not a spiritual answer, but Instagram does help a lot. Yeah. And again, you said you like the analogy, but I think that, you know, that's why I like Charles Xavier, is he would go into that ballroom Cerebro, and he would put on that helmet, and it helped him see who was out there that were other mutants that were in need. And he could even like almost feel their pain or feel their emotions at that time. And I would say, I mean, again, social media definitely helps in this day and age to see who's doing what. By and large, not always, but by and large, online following tends to follow most leaders in most industries. Not all, like there's a lot of young leaders that are just doing an absolute amazing job in government, on the Hill in DC, that maybe the leaders in those circles know who they are, but their online following isn't going to come from that. But if you're like become a, let's say a college star athlete, even a high school star athlete, you're going to get some pretty big following these days. Any type of athleticism, any type of speaking, writing, a lot of the creative gifts, music, even like videography maybe, or photography, these you can kind of create these profiles and curated profiles for it. But that's kind of gave access to find them. And then too, I mean, this is massive. This is more the spiritual side, where it's like, if this was the avenue and this gives access and ability, where is their favor coming from? Is one, I do feel like I was designed and put on this earth to do this. So like, I think there is an anointing on my life to help unite young Christian leaders, ideally towards revival in our generation. And that's my goal. So I think also my motives are very pure. I'm not trying to just be around famous and or known and or really gifted young leaders. I really have a shepherd's heart for them and want them to do well, especially in light of how many leaders have crashed and burned, or they're a flash in a pan. I don't want that for these young people. I've prayed countless hours for the young leaders in this group. But then too, I've prayed a lot, Luke 10, that Jesus told us to pray. And I don't think we pray that a lot. And I would say it's the second biggest prayer I've prayed consistently over years of my life outside of for my certain family member's salvation is Luke 10. Jesus tells us, we know part of it, we don't usually know the other part, is Jesus tells us, pray for more laborers. And so he told us to do this, is pray for God to raise up more laborers. We usually know the second part, though. He says, because the laborers are, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. And so we usually know that verse, the harvest is plentiful, the laborers are few. Our response to that, when we see, man, there's so much work that could be done in this world today, or man, it's very broken today, or a lot of people today are saying things like, man, I hope, I don't know if I could raise kids in a world like this today, or older people I hear say a lot of things like, man, when I was your age, it was nothing like this, the most divided or chaotic or toxic, far from God I've ever seen it, stuff like that. Or I always say the Christian version of that is they'll be like, man, I just hope Jesus comes back soon. There's a lot of fear and worry about the brokenness of the harvest, if you will. And so That makes me pray a lot. God, would you raise up more laborers that have sincere motives for your kingdom? Not because there's also never been as much temptation to be a Christian leader and do all the right things for all the wrong reasons. And so I also want to be very intentional about, prayerful about who we're bringing in, because you said that you came in and they were very passionate. The culture could change so quickly if you just invite influential young people who are Christians, but you got to invite people that aren't trying to climb the ladder. They're not trying to just network only for self. They really, it's almost like I want to bring people where like, then this is like an answer to prayer. I've been praying for this kind of community, because then they're grateful. They're not leveraging this as one more opportunity to get where they want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Maybe we should go back even further. Tell me how you met Jesus. You mentioned raising a Christian home, but how you opted to pursue a path of vocational ministry.
Yeah.
Or I mean, origin story. What's what's Professor X's origin story here?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate that when people ask me, how did you get into this and how did you start caring about the next generation, or just even get into leadership positions at a young age, I'm very fortunate that I got very fast tracked into that very soon after salvation. Long story short is after a three and a half year relationship and getting cheated on in high school, and then dedicating most of my middle school and high school life and identity around basketball, I had 1 week where I found out my girlfriend of many years was cheating on me. We were a very public couple, and I got into it with a player in a team, my basketball team, and I got cut off the basketball team. And so my identity, or really my idols, were taken and or betrayed me or hurt me, or just fell short of what they could be and where I was putting them anyway. And so I went to church about a month or two later, still searching now for who am I without this relationship that I'm so known for, and without this sport that I'm known for, and best, what I do with my time when, if I wasn't with her, I was doing this sport. My friends, my closest friends are playing the sport still, and I'm not. So we're kind of going maybe different paths in life now, and they're all still together and I'm not. And so I was definitely wondering and searching, in a sense, and thinking about bigger things, if you will, and went to church and gave my life to Christ, sat in the very back row. First time I ever like felt God speaking to me in a very direct way. Had an altar call, put in my information like you tend to. And basically what happened was the youth pastor of that youth ministry, 2 weeks later, gave me a phone call and kind of heard a little bit of my story and wanted to know more about what I was thinking about going forward. And what he did was he really kind of stopped me and basically said, hey, if you want to take your faith seriously, then I would love to take you under my wing and I'd love to pour into you. But my one catch is you have to pour into your school and try to reach as many kids for Christ as you can. And so basically I'll disciple you if you'll be an evangelist to your school for the next 2 years until you graduate. Because his thinking was there weren't a lot of Christians he knew there. And I told him there weren't any Christians I knew there. And as a youth pastor who had a big youth ministry, he probably had around 1,000 high school kids and then even more middle school kids.
That's a big youth ministry. That's massive.
Yeah, no, it was definitely one of the biggest in the city of Dallas, which again, Dallas has a lot of big youth ministries. And so even God having that be the guy that I went to that church and I connected with that guy, and that guy took a special interest in me. It was a little bit for the church too, but even really cool detail is like, I'm half Mexican, half South African. This man was Brazilian, but he was at a predominantly white church, and I had not met a lot of Latino Christians. And so even then I got this guy who was like, oh, someone who's like more like me or looks like me or has come from a different country or culture, was really cool. But I feel like he, again, just fast-tracked everything, because I had my vertical relationship with God already before I talked to him, but now through talking to him and him reaching out to me and offering this, is I had a vertical relationship with him, who was like, follow me as I follow Christ. And then I had, which I don't know if I would have got at all, and I think a lot of young people don't even get the mentor, let alone the mission that he gave me of, I'm not only pouring into you, I'm pouring into you so that you reach your kid, your friends for Christ. And the weight of that too, of like, you might be the only light that they see. I really took that very serious, both of them, getting mentored and pouring into my school. So I was inviting dozens of kids to church, like, and I would have dozens of kids going to church. And I really think, in a sense, even that created this connector side of me as well, which probably was somewhat there and untapped. But I was definitely known as the guy that like got everyone together on Wednesday night and we'd all carpool there. And so that also helped them continue to invest in me, because now I'm older. I know, hey, if you're a youth pastor and you got a kid who's bringing 20 to 40 kids to church, you start investing like in that kid even more. Yeah. And yeah, that ended up, they started having me kind of be a young leader within that large youth ministry. And so gave me a lot of exposure to maybe possibility, big vision, big faith, even big events like 1,000 person youth ministry. I mean, Wood Camp was even bigger. And so maybe my norm was really extravagant for compared to if I maybe was in a smaller town and could have got all those things, and it would have been very rich, just as rich. But I do think God had a plan for something bigger. And why go back and say, I think that him doing that early on, I'm still trying to reach my generation for Christ. I've gotten older and I've gotten more influence since then. And I'm still always trying to get discipled and mentored. And now I'm trying to give back what, just like he did to me. And so, you know, nothing's changed as much other than I'm not just trying to reach my high school kids. Now I started in college trying to reach kids in my college. Then after that was kids in Dallas, or young people in Dallas in general, the whole city. And about 6 years ago is when it shifted to like the nation, or like who are young Christians, who I could like give community to in the whole nation.
Wow. It sounds like that theme. And I do believe words matter. So I wouldn't say that mentorship and discipleship are the same thing, but it sounds like those two words have been a theme from that time you met Jesus until here you sit today.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I often say that, It's sad, but I feel like most people get saved when they're young, but they don't get discipled when they're young. And I was very fortunate to get saved and then discipled very quickly. And I think it was a distinctive factor to why I stayed in the faith. And instead of leaving the church, I became a leader in the church. And I think a lot of my friends, even who were Christians in high school and beyond, some have wavered. And I think part of it was because they did have the rhythm of going to church, but not like that relationship with someone who's like committed to them spiritually.
Yeah, it certainly exposes a flaw in a lot of our ministries today, where we would say like we want to win people for Christ, we want to reach people. You know, the church is the front door to that exposure and relationship, but there tends to be a pretty severe lack of discipleship by means of a follow-up. We may have groups, or we may have different like activities or equipping classes that you can participate in, and those are certainly, you know, wonderful. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but you're the product of someone personally investing into you and showing you what it means to be a follower of Jesus, in that you found purpose, in that you found a little bit more of the wiring, how God made you to be. Would you agree with some of that?
Yeah. I mean, someone asking you hard questions at a young age is really, really powerful. Someone exposing you to their world, and if that world is 10, 20 years older than you, you start getting a vision for what's possible. Or what I would say is like you start hanging out with people older than you, especially even just 5 years older than you, let alone 20. You start seeing the kind of people you may want to be, whether it's like, I want to be able to do this like they do this, competency. Or character, you might be like, I want to be just like them. I want to be able to be like that, just like they are. And that could be like prayer, or that could be, which is going to require intimacy with God. Or it could be anointing, or man, sometimes you see someone who's, yeah, they are really gifted, but you can tell God, like, they were designed for this. And I think that comes from like fasting, prayer, deep intimacy. So you're like, how do I become like they are, and what do I need to do to do that? But if you're like many young people who don't have that kind of exposure relationship, I think you just look to your right and you see a lot of other young people that are probably going the same pace as you. They're just as serious about God as you are. And then you look to the left, same thing. Like, they're not that developed in their career. They're still trying to figure out what their calling is. They didn't get a big job after college either. They're still kind of figuring it out. And over here, it's like tons of other people moving back home with their parents, and tons of people that are like kind of somewhat in church but not really plugged in, and not in that much community, not as known, that you kind of just settle for the standard that you keep seeing around you, and you think, oh, I'm not behind, I'm like right on par with everyone else. But yeah, you start disrupting that by getting around people that are spiritually or age more mature than you. It definitely disrupts that, and kind of forces you to be like, what do I need to do to get there? Because it's not being around this. Something's got to change, basically.
Yeah. Well, and certainly when it comes to our faith, and I started in ministry at 19 and I've never done anything else. And so it was tough because I didn't have a ton of framework for others who were doing the same thing, pursuing the same thing. You know, 19 to 25, that's when you see all your friends that you went to church with start to fall away, start pursuing other things. And so it was really hard for me to find someone who could be a type of North Star, a type of Paul to my Timothy to go, hey, show me, how do I do this? And I got so lucky to get connected with a couple of, you know, older leaders who were really generous with their time. But it took an ask, you know, and it took the humility of going, I don't know what I'm doing. Can you show me? What are some of those relationships for you? What are some of those things that you've kind of done in the earlier years of your ministry to resource yourself in the areas of mentorship, discipleship?
Yeah, and you're saying, so like, I resourced myself, as in there were older people who offered, and I capitalized on that.
Let's say this way, how did you pursue those relationships? How did you identify people who had values that you valued? And then, not even hypothetically, literally, how did you ask, hey, can I have your time?
I do tend to look for, again, those two things of who has the competency that it would be really wise for me to grow in that competency in this season, from how to read the word better, how to like, these days, every stage of life has a new stage. Like, I was recently making a list. I might see if I can find it. It's why I think that discipleship is so important and never becomes obsolete, is because there's always like the next season, where someone is ahead of you. This might be a little long. I've never talked on this before, but it's something I'm starting to tinker through and think about, is how there's someone always in the stage that's ahead of you. And just to get an idea of this type of stage thing, if you will, when I got married, I really engaged. It was when I really started paying attention to, or realizing, because I got asked all the time the same question, was I got engaged, and as soon as I got engaged, the follow-up question, of course, is always, when are you going to get married? And then even at your wedding, or even before that marriage, as you're clearly, you're engaged, you're about to get married, they're like, oh, when are you guys thinking about having kids? We're not even married yet, and they're asking that. And I started thinking about how, like, there's always, once you get there, then there's another question of, when are you going to do this, and when are you going to do that? And I started thinking, how young does it start, and how long does it go? Like, for example, starting, this is the first big date I could think of, is, when do you get to drive? Like, when do you turn 16 so you can start driving? When are you going to graduate? Let's say you're hanging out with another family, you meet one of their kids, you can tell that they're in high school. You're like, hey, so how far are you from graduating? then of course it's going to be, when are you going to go to college and what are you majoring in? That's like the scary question. Your senior year is, where are you going to college and what are you majoring in?
That question stresses me out on the other side of college and graduation. I feel that.
Yeah, which is, yeah, that is when you, now you're at college, is what are you going to do after you graduate? That's even scarier because the college was like the last stretch of, okay, mom and dad are kind of hopefully helping you, but now it's, what are you doing? And it's on you alone, is what are you going to do after college? And then also, and this might happen in college too, but I said, do you have a boyfriend or girlfriend? And when are you going to get a boyfriend or girlfriend? Then you finally get a boyfriend and girlfriend, and immediately, like, what are you thinking about proposing? Then you propose, when are you getting married? Then you get married. When are you guys going to have kids? So I was asking friends, like, what's after that when you say, okay, that's where I'm at right now. I have no kids, but I'm married. Like, when are you going to have kids? And it seems like this is what the advice I've been given of what's going to be the next question is, after you have your first kid, the next question is, when are you going to have another kid?
Mm-hmm. And then it's almost immediate.
They're going to be like, when are you going to have another kid? Then another kid, then another kid. I don't know what point they stop asking, when are you going to have another kid? Or maybe it's, are you going to have another kid? Until you,
it's like after three, I think. No one was at, they were more like, please don't have any more. You have too many kids. We have four.
I think maybe it's when do your kids start school? When do the kids graduate school? Where are they going? Where now? Now it's almost like, oh, again, now you're doing it vicariously. You're getting asked questions about your kids that you were asked is, where are they going to college? Oh, what are they majoring in? When are they getting married? Or are they dating anyone? It's which I then put into old, you're getting old age or your empty nesters. When do you become an empty nester? And then it's like, what is it like becoming in-laws? How's the grandparent life? Do you have any grandchildren yet? What about retirement? When do you think you're going to retire? What are you doing with your time now? What are you doing now? What, now that you are retired, what are you dedicating? What, are you playing pickleball or what is that?
golf.
What are you doing with your legacy? That's a, more of a faith question in that sense. And then how are you holding up since? I put this one, though, is like, I think about like Tony Evans lost his wife recently. Is like, how are you holding up after? Because one person is going to pass before the other. Is like, what is life not only like after your kids, but maybe after your spouse? And then I don't even know, again, I'm not even around that age. Is like, is there a conversation like, when are you going to go to old folks home? Or when are you going to move in with your kids? But it just seems like from around teenager to who knows how long, it's like this next stage. But I think the again, long way to really practically spell that out. But what I like about that is that means there's always like someone who's spiritually and a couple steps ahead of you, basically, that they've walked in that and maybe not even mastered that, but they could tell you like, here, let me tell you what not to do, because I figured this out the hard way. And it gives a lot of value of people in all seasons. And it really gives a lot of value to the people in the older generation. Because right now I think the church conversation generally is like, oh, we got to pass the baton to the next generation, and then we become like obsolete or we're unimportant. When in a lot of ways, there's less people that have been in those older stages. There's a lot more in the younger stages. And so if we could like better communicate, no, I don't know what it's like to be an empty nester. And I don't know what it's like to help my kids through college or help my kids as they date and be a really amazing like in-law parent to these other families now that are part of my family. That I think it gives a lot of value to the older generation in discipleship. I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on that, and I can get really practical on some things about how do you ask those people when you find, because yeah, your question was like, what do you look for? Is I'm looking for who's in that next stage, no matter where I am. And right now it's marriage. It's I'm married and I've spent a lot of time growing as a Christian and a lot of time growing as a leader, a lot of my 20s. If you're familiar with spinning the flywheel from good to great, I've been spinning that flywheel for a long time. And a lot of my early 20s was the hard work of spinning it. And my late 20s was not as hard. And I started seeing the fruit of it and momentum of it. My 30s, I would say I'm really seeing the fruit of it with not doing as much at all of like building. It's almost coming to me. However, for marriage, the way I've been seeing it now that I'm 3 years in is I'm doing what I was doing in my early 20s towards leadership. With marriage is like, I'm doing the hard part of spinning the flywheel to be a really good husband, trying to be.
Yeah. I was thinking as you listed out those questions and kind of identifying, you know, what's next, the whole journey may start with, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, that's the question that adults ask kids. My oldest son is 15 now, and that question started before the driving question. And what was funny is he started going, when he was really little, it was a missionary. And then after that, it was a basketball player. And then he saw how insane 10-year-old basketball players are now. And he goes, I'm not that. And so then it was like, well, what do you think I should be? And so we've just had this dialogue for years with our kids about, you know, passions and talents and callings. And, you know, really there's no answer. You have to discover that for yourself. But I think when it comes to identifying the next phase of life due to the natural progression that each of us are on, it really has to go into values, right? So it sounds like you're saying, as you look at your marriage now, which congrats on 3 years, by the way, as you look at your marriage now, you're going, who has a marriage that encompasses and embodies some of the same values that my spouse and I do? And that's someone who I would like to learn wisdom from. Is that what you're getting at? Is that kind of what you're saying? Like you go, hey, this person's in that next phase. That's something that interests me or that I would like to be like that, you know?
Yeah.
And now as a 37-year-old Christian, there's people that I go, I just want to be you when I grow up. Like your level of intimacy with the Lord, the way that you love your spouse, your kids respect you. There's just goals there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, what are the marriages that I really admire? I don't want to say that they are easy, but they definitely like look pretty easy. And I know they've worked at it. Again, it's competency or characters. Like, how do I do what you do in marriage? Because I see the intentionality, or I see the way you admire, or the way you honor, or the way you, instead of where I could choose sarcasm, you're just like the best at words of affirmation. And then character is like, how do I become like that? And that's great. I might know some of the answers, but I think they're going to be able to give a lot more detail to this. All that stuff's the overflow from being this and choosing to become this and prioritize this.
Yeah. Let's deconstruct that thought, because I think there is a helpful progression there for anyone who is a person of influence that would listen to our conversation. So you find yourself in a position of leadership. You have influence over others. Likely in the spiritual context, since that's what we're talking about here today. How would you identify how or who you'd like to be in that next phase of life? And how would you approach someone to ask them, hey, could I learn from you? Could I fly to your city and buy you lunch just for an hour of your time? What are some of those practical things that you've done in your journey to be resourced?
Yeah. I mean, a couple things I've definitely learned from failure is how to ask the right way, or just how do you ask someone to disciple you in a way that removes almost like every excuse that they could give you. And I think one of the things I make sure to do is start strong with like momentum, where they see in a world of young people that often are flaky, non-committal, and not maybe as hungry or have honor for them, is I want to show that there's actually already momentum in my life. And then I can ask, but I could get so much further if you would consider pouring into me. So I usually try to point out a couple things where there's momentum. For example, if you're young, and I know sometimes you won't have as much like, oh, I'm started this and I'm building this and I'm writing this book, but there's usually like, I'm serving in my church right now a lot, and I'm one of the youngest in the room for this initiative that they put me in charge of, or I got a seat at the table here, or I'm on the volunteer team and they put me over this, and I'm leading people that are younger than me and some that are older than me. And that shows, like, if I was trying to hire someone, I want to see signs of promotion. I want to see signs of people have entrusted this person with bigger roles. So like, it's not just where did they work, it's did they get any type of like promotion while they were there? Because I think if I ever saw a resume and I'm like, okay, several different jobs, and almost every job they get promoted, that's just a sure shot. This person works hard. This person is all in. This person isn't like checking their watch to leave. They take whatever they've been given. and they then multiply that and capitalize on that. They put in the work. And so I often say that leaders don't want to start fires. They want to pour gasoline on fires. And so when I see that and I say, like, I want to share momentum, I don't say that phrase, but I'm thinking I want to start with and lead with when asking someone to disciple me, here's some momentum in my life of like things that God's doing. And I'm basically showing them fire. And I want them to think, wow, if this is what they're doing without my help already or without any older people right now, imagine what could happen if some wisdom and some support could come around this person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's just sort of intangibles that are so easy to identify in someone. On one hand, it's really easy to be paralyzed by vision and have no plan of action to want to like go after. So, you know, hey, I would like to write a book, or I would like to plant a church someday. But if there's no momentum, if there's no effort being put into that area, then we have atrophy. The other side is kind of also true, where if you are just head down going, you know, you're pouring gas on every fire and there's no strategy or intention behind it, then you're an arson. And so I think there has to be a good balance of both. And just to keep it on theme with the conversation we've been having, I'm in charge of me and my development. Like, that's actually my responsibility to steward, at least in my opinion. That's on me. And if I'm in a healthy community of other believers, of other leaders, maybe it is within a church setting, or maybe I have some type of community similar to the things you built, where I'm surrounded by other people who are, you know, doing the same things, but maybe in different locations. It's the onus is on me to ask for that help. I think the onus is also on me to offer that help. Right. Mm-hmm. So as much as I've been the benefit of really amazing, incredible leaders who have poured into me, I too have to be willing to share that with other people, which sometimes can be an awkward, like, hey, I really see a lot of myself in you, you know, let me give you some pointers. Or, hey, I really believe in what God's doing in and through you. If I can ever be of service, please let me know how I can help. What have you discovered in that lane of offering your help to others? Be it through, hey, I see something in you, and if I can help, great. Or maybe it's as straightforward as, if you need someone to show you how to follow Jesus, I've been where you are, and I would love to be a part of that process.
Yeah, I mean, you're asking what I've seen is, I think a lot of it has been amazing when they're hungry, and then it's been harder when they're not. If they are hungry, then I've kind of seen discipleship. If it was a seesaw that like hinges back and forth, I think it hinges more so on the hunger of the next generation or the person getting discipled. Like, I think discipleship hinges on their hunger more than I think it hinges on the older person's availability or vulnerability. Because now that I'm on the other side and I'm older too, I've seen, like, if I'm available, or no matter how vulnerable I'm willing to be, if they're not hungry and or don't show up, or they cancel last second, or they don't ask any questions when they're with you, then it really impacts how much I'm able to disciple them. Of course, if they don't show up, that's just not happening. And even if they do show up but don't ask questions because they're not as hungry, but they're like, I think this is a good thing to do, I'm just going to just try it out, but they're not bringing that hunger, it impacts the whole experience. And so that's where I feel like if you could have young people that are hungry, it's such a game changer in discipleship.
Hmm. Yeah, that hunger is something that really has to come from humility, right? Because I'm not going to have an appetite for things that I don't think I need. And there's some emotional intelligence, and there's some spiritual maturity that's shown when someone goes, help me, I don't know what I'm doing. I just know I want to be faithful. I think in a leadership context too, so discipleship is really how we are formed into our relationship with Jesus. Mentorship, I would say, is more how we, if I'm seeking a mentor, I'm asking someone, hey, show me the way. Show me how to get to this next level. I really want to work hard. You know, in this season of my life, I really want Onward to become a respected place where leaders who are tired or burnt out, or for leaders who really have a lot of ambition but just don't know how to do this race called vocational ministry, I'd love for it to be that. So I find myself asking a lot of advice from people who are doing a type of thing that I'm doing. there's also the flip, and you and I were talking a little bit about this in the back and forth to see if you'd be on the show. There's also an identification of someone who you see something in and you wanting to approach them and say, I can help if you'd like it.
Mm-hmm.
What experience have you had in that vein of ministry? Because it's one thing to say, hey, come to this retreat we're putting on. It's another thing to say, hey, let me be an influence in your life, your leadership, or your discipleship to Jesus.
Yeah. I've definitely been on the other side of asking someone to disciple me than I have been on the asking to disciple someone. Maybe it's just because I'm always asking questions. I think is a lot more natural for me. Trying to think now through when I offer myself to disciple someone, it is interesting how that can also still feel like rejection, even though I'm like, I'm giving you something. I feel like bigger rejection is definitely when you're like, will you disciple me? And that person says no. That hurts more, but it's not like totally easy to offer yourself as a discipler and potentially get rejected either. And so I think, I mean, this goes into like, even when I tell younger people how to ask older people is, I would do the same if I was older and I'm trying to ask someone younger is, I tell a lot of young people, like, make sure you tell them what you want to learn from them and try to keep it simple at first, at least like to maybe two or three things. Like, I want to learn how to be this like you are. I want to learn how to do this like you do. And so two to three things like that to begin with, not that that's all a discipleship, but it gets you in the door and gets you time with them and gets some chemistry built and some knowledge built of, okay, what else do you want to learn from that person as you get more exposure to their life? And so in the same way, if I'm older, I'm looking for a young person who's pretty clear on this is what they want to do. This is where they want to go. And ideally, maybe it's like, and that's areas that I've also been where I wanted to go that direction and I wanted to do this and I wanted to build that. And I have done that. I've not done it perfectly, but I could definitely help them in this. So like I do tend to, not always, but I tend to disciple a lot of young people who want to learn how to build an organization or a nonprofit and learn how to fundraise. And a lot of who want to learn how to speak and communicate and feel a calling to preaching. Some that want to plant churches, and some that want to start some type of organization or nonprofit. Those generally, because I've done those things and that's what those people can see, I tend to be asked then, hey, will you show me how you do that? And so that does make it easier. It doesn't mean I can never disciple someone who's like, oh, I want to grow in, let's say something, foreign missions. I want to be a foreign missionary, and I want to really focus on, maybe even before that, this emotionally healthy, like desert father life. And I'm not saying I don't care about that. It's just not what I'm marked by and done as much work in. So I think I could still pour into that person. I just think it does make it a little easier when it's in the lane that you accelerated in.
Yeah, that's really good. I like when you were talking about the I want to be like you, or I want to do like you. I think sometimes when asking for help, it's important to have some specificity with the type of help you're asking for. Those two questions seem to parse it out really easy. Hey, I would like to become like you, or hey, I would like to do like you. And obviously asking questions is at the root of every curious person. It's an invaluable gift to have. Let's change gears just a little bit here, Grant. You're working in a few really eclectic and unique areas in this kind of season of your life with Think, really nothing else out there like it. And then within Think, you have an even more specific and unique role with the next gen stuff. You're also helping to plant a church. You're not the one planting it. You're not the one pastoring the church from what I could see, but you're a very active part of it. Why are you doing all this? What are you working towards?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I definitely operate based off core values, and then I start with values and then I look for vehicles for those values. And so everything you just listed to me are just vehicles to express a handful of core values for me. And some of my core values, especially in this season and probably for many years, will be around next generation, around discipleship, and around culture and impacting culture. And I really would say, and then revival. Like, and I think revival, true revival, doesn't just happen within the church or the faith circle. I think it should and must overflow into the culture through God's people. And so when I say all those to say, like, revival and culture, the next generation, discipleship, is when I see a place where I get to gather the next generation and accelerate what they're doing and accelerate those who are in culture, not just in the church. Because I felt like seminaries were training pastors for the church, but they weren't training missionaries for culture. And why that's important is because most young people don't go to church. And so to only train the people that young people never even listen to is to really, I think, like, mathematically one of the worst equations. However, they do listen to music, and there's a lot of Christians in the music industry. They do watch movies, and there are Christians in the music industry. They watch pro sports, and there's a lot of Christians in the pro sports industry. You could go on and on, from fashion to modeling to actors, and that's who I'm thinking of. I'm putting on that helmet, if you will, and praying, yeah, God, will you raise up more laborers, and will you connect me to those laborers? Because I know they're out there already. I know you're way ahead of us in all this, God, that he's doing 10,000 things we don't even realize in 10,000 different arenas, industries, parts of our country. I just want to ask if he would connect us together for the sake of how many lost people are in this next generation. And then when I see the church plant, it's because I do speak a lot, and I do help a lot of churches and speak at conferences, mostly to leaders that want to reach the next gen. And I'm speaking on, like, how to build a discipleship structure, or how we could do small groups better and have real, sincere, deep community that doesn't feel forced, but feels like truly your closest friends, and how missions could look like if we didn't just hinge success of a church on Sunday, but on the scattering of the people and their faithfulness and equipping of what does it look like to be excellent and faithful and intentional in whatever industry and whatever level of influence you have. Because I think there's a lot we could be doing as Christians in the workforce and in our jobs, rather than being not much different than the world, especially for young people, where many young people don't like their jobs and are willing and ready to leave their jobs. And I think if we spend 1/3 of your life, which we do, at this job, and whatever job you do, then I think God cares about it. And I want them to see it as a mission field, and I want them to be best, one of the best at it. I want their peers in that industry to respect them. I want them to not just be a nice person. I want them to be really, really good at what they do that people can't help but respect them, and ideally even listen to what drives them and motivates them, and what are their values. And so I think that it's hard to preach on those things, though, when you're not functionally doing it within the confines of what they're doing in it, which is the church. And so, though I don't, and I'm not looking for more things to do, one, I think it's very important, no matter how much I do for the church, I always want to be in a church. And so I was already always been in a church. It's awesome when you get to be a part of a church that you have some type of influence into, like, hey, I think it should be this way. Well, go do it. And helping with a church plant allows you to build that in the DNA from the beginning. Two, Noah being a close friend and part of our original retreat, it was awesome to support him in a city that has so many new people moving in every week. And then three, especially, is probably the biggest question I get asked when I preach at conferences, especially to pastors, is they'll say, this is really, really helpful, but what church is doing discipleship really, really well? Or what church is doing the missional stuff you're talking about really well? Or what church is doing X, Y, Z really well? So they're looking for models before they're going to move the ship in a whole different direction. And I want to help contribute, and not just critique, and contribute to being one model that we could point to and say, hey, well, this is what we're doing. And this is even how we're failing forward. Because I think it's a lot easier to talk about, of course, than actually do. And I want to be able to tell stories of, it's hard in the American church culture and in the way Christians even respond and maybe could have a consumer mentality towards church to do this. But this is where we fumbled through it and figured this out and fumbled through this and figured this out, that eventually we're able to like give kind of a living proof of this can work and people are hungry for this.
It's amazing, man. Yeah, you got me fired up there. Last question. Well, it doesn't have to be, but we're at almost an hour. Last question. It's one I love to just end these conversations with. So Onward was named from a season where I was going through just like an intense mental health crisis and was really struggling at work and in teaching and preaching as well. And I wanted to quit. And someone told me, don't quit. God's not done with you yet. Maybe there's some people listening to today's episode that are just at their wit's end and want to throw the towel in and feel like God's done with them, feel like that idea that they've been chasing after isn't going to work. Maybe the check is never going to come. Maybe the people are never going to return to the church or programming. What would you say to just motivate and encourage that person?
Do not grow weary of doing good. Definitely. What I would say is like when you start feeling like, yeah, it's just not going to work out. But as long as you feel like, I don't know if it's going to work out, but I do know for sure I'm doing what God's called me to, I can speak into that. If it's like, I'm really trying to force this, and just because I'm doing it sometimes maybe for the wrong reasons or partially for the wrong reason, like it's mostly for God, but some for me, I do think that that's really, I mean, that's one of the most exhausting states to be in, is where you're trying to bust doors down open under God's name, but it's really more for you than it is for him. That's exhausting. I don't think God feels this compelling rush to like, let me part the sea for that. But if it's like, I don't know how this is going to work, but I do know God has called me to it. The two things I always think is, I love that position, because then I'm like, God, I didn't even want to go through this door, but you called me through it, so can you get me through it? Mm-hmm. And then you got at your back the creator of the universe, the best dad in the world, the man who has a cattle on 1,000 hills. Like, he can do that. He will do that. I mean, if anything, I would be like, I've started to learn, this is the moment where between now and whatever that due date or deadline is, like, wow, let's see what God's about to do, because he's done so many things before that you start kind of getting comfortable with the uncomfortable, I think, eventually. So that when you're in that state of, again, I don't know how it's going to work, I do know God's called me to do this. And I've also, hopefully you could then also say, I do know he's showed up so many times before, and I think I'm pretty confident and prayerful that he's going to show up again. That's number one. And then number two is, I always just want to remind someone who's in that season is, when you look back on your life and you look at seasons of your life that are the closest seasons you've ever had with God, your reliance on him is uncanny. Your time in the Word is some of the most potent and powerful. Your nearness to him is deep. It almost always are seasons of transition and difficulty and lack of control and not knowing what's around the corner. It's like obedience today, I don't even know what obedience tomorrow will look like. And so we can look back on our life and see those seasons that were difficult. And it is an interesting thought that many of us are like, man, if I thought about my closest seasons to God, it was those seasons. And if I had to go back to them, no, that's not really what I want to go back to, is that season. But if I asked you, would you want to erase that season from your story, I would be very confident you'd say, no, I could not erase that season from my story either. So like, I don't want to go back to it, but I also don't want to erase it. And so you might be in that season where it is, I'm in the middle of it right now. It's one of those seasons, again, that it's not ideally where I want to be, but I've seen and I've been with God in the middle of this. And we got to remember, like, that verse, we all kind of know this verse, but should comfort us when we're in that season, is, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, like, even though I'm in that season and there's the shadow of death, not death, but the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for God is with me. we feel the closeness and the nearness of God, and the confidence we have that we don't fear because he's with us, his rod and his staff, they comfort us. And so it does help, which I can't imagine if I did not have the faith, or if you did not have the faith, that's the bigger fear or worry or stress, is imagine going through what you're going through without God. Or imagine going through what you are going through basically without hope. I think then you can really come back blessed. I've always, Corey, just to go on this a little, my favorite movie is It's a Wonderful Life. And I know it's always seen as a Christmas movie, but that movie helps so much with the perspective that this man is at like the end of his rope. And there's this famous quote of, I'm forgetting who said it. I think it was D.L. Moody. He said, God's address is at the end of your rope.
Yeah.
And George Bailey, he gets there and he literally gets to the point where he says, I wish I was never born. And what I like about that movie is he gets to see his life if he was never born. And then, of course, he realizes the impact and power his life is having, even though he's in this very difficult situation. He really, to the point of like, basically, I wish I just never existed. And then he, by being exposed, really, I think it's reframing. And it's what I think a lot of faith and God's word does, is reframe what like feels like the heaviest, the weightiest, the loneliest. And then you get through the word of God or God's nearness, reframing. He comes back. What I like to the same exact situation, but enthusiastically, joyfully, he's pumped to be right back in the same problems he has. Still owes a lot of money, still apparently going to go to jail, all these different things. But he's like so enthusiastic because his mindset and his framework of how he views that is very different. And so that's what my advice would be is you're walking in the valley of the shadow of death, which you should not fear because God is with you.
Man, you were preaching there. There is redemption and resurrection, and God never wastes any pain, not a drop of it. That's so good, Grant. I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for your time today and for joining us. I'd love to have you on again at some point if you'd say yes, because this was really good conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, appreciate everything you do, man. I look forward to hanging again soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Grant, and thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to give us a follow on Instagram and let us know what you're thinking of the show. Feel free to suggest anything that would make it more beneficial to you, and have an awesome week, everybody.
Onward is a nonprofit organization that exists to connect, care for, equip, and encourage young ministry leaders. To learn more about us or support us, please visit onwardleader.com.